Good morning, everyone. Yeah, nice and warm in here today. I'm going to start this message with the brief speaking of life presentation that Joe does regularly on the website, and he's speaking about the subject of bread.
I love the smell of fresh baking bread. My wife sometimes puts the ingredients into our bread machine last thing at night so that we wake up to that wonderful aroma. It certainly helps me to thank God for our daily bread. Have you noticed how often bread is mentioned in everyday cliches and idioms? For example, we talk about taking the bread out of someone's mouth, meaning to deprive them of their livelihood. Or to break bread means to eat a meal, especially in companionable association with others. And to know which side one's bread is buttered on means to be aware of those things that are to your advantage. Today, in our modern world, when we have dozens of varieties to choose from, it's easy to take bread for granted. But for much of history, bread was so essential to human survival that it was known as the staff of life. That is why it made such an effective analogy in the Bible. It's an analogy that's easy to miss if we don't read the scriptures as a connected story. When we read it piecemeal, we can miss some of the long and beautiful threads that run through the Old and New Testaments. You probably know the story of how God fed the children of Israel in the wilderness with miraculous bread that fell from the sky each night. They called it manna. And it was their staple diet for the many years they wandered in the wilderness. Then as they prepared to enter the promised land, the manna ceased. There's an interesting statement in the book of 2 Baruch, which is part of the Apocrypha. Those are books that are not part of inspired scripture, but biblical scholars consider them to be of historical interest. 2 Baruch 29 verse 8 reads, "And it shall come to pass at that selfsame time, in the days when the Messiah comes, that the treasury of manna shall again descend from on high, and they will eat of it in those years." That gives a new level of meaning to the miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000. Perhaps it was what the crowd had in mind when they said, "Surely this is the prophet who has come into the world." They thought Jesus had given them manna, like Moses. The crowd followed Jesus, wanting more of the miracle bread. But Jesus explained that they had missed the point. Manna was only an analogy of a much more important source of nourishment. He told them in John 6, verses 32 and 33, "It is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Jesus was, of course, referring to himself. We need bread to sustain our physical existence. But as he said, we cannot live by bread alone. Even the best bread, like the loaves my wife makes, is just an analogy to remind us that what we really need is the true bread from heaven. The life that comes from our relationship with God. That is bread that can sustain our lives forever. I'm Joseph Takach, speaking of life.
It's interesting in that section of John 6 that Joe was referring to there, where Jesus described himself as the bread of life. John himself classifies that miracle as a sign. If you're used to using the old King James, you'll probably find it's translated as a miracle, but that is a misnomer and gives the wrong impression from what John was saying. In fact, the book of John itself is made up of a series of signs that he selects, each of them having a deep and profound spiritual meaning that stands above and beyond, you might say, the miraculous events that quite often were told in those various episodes. So what is a sign? Whether we look at the Greek word or the English word, the meaning's pretty synonymous, very clear. A sign, first of all, is something that tells us what or where something is. So as you come into the community centre today, you see on the outside, if you didn't notice, Murubak Community Centre. If you walk round the corner and down the street, you'll see various buildings with names on them, like Coles or Bread Shop or, you know, Estate Agent and so on. That's the normal and obvious meaning of sign. There are also street signs, which tell us where to go and what's up ahead. So we might see a sign on the street or the road saying, you know, Lilydale, X number of kilometres, or Mount Evelyn, or whatever it is. So it's telling us what's coming. And thirdly, perhaps less commonly, we come across signs which tell us what has been, what used to be there. We might go around the city in Melbourne and see signs that indicate various historical places. This is where John Batman first established his hut on the banks of the Yarra and all this kind of thing, which reflects us back into the past. So signs are primarily about the present, but they're also indications of what is ahead and also what's happened in the past. It's interesting, when Jesus took the bread in the Last Supper and introduced it as something to be used in remembrance of him, that factor is only mentioned in one of the Gospels. I think most of us, when we talk about the bread as part of taking it in that way, we think of it in that sense of being a memorial to Christ and particularly to his sacrifice. But if you look up Matthew and Mark, they simply say, take, eat, this is my body, full stop. And the emphasis, the natural emphasis is there, is upon that present tense. Just as Jesus said to the people and his disciples, I am the bread of life. When we take the bread in that way, it's not just a matter of remembering what happened nearly 2,000 years ago, significant as though that was. It's about recognizing the reality of Christ living in us and being our bread. So as a sign, it's much, much more than a memorial. It engages us with who and what Jesus is, what it means to ingest him into our being, and also, of course, what it points to as to our future. Secondly, the bread and wine that Jesus introduced is one of only two ceremonies or two practices that Jesus Christ gave the church. Baptism is the other one, and it likewise is a sign. But it differs from communion and taking the bread and wine in being a once-in-a-lifetime event. I can still remember very vividly my baptism, which is now over 50 years ago. I don't remember a lot of the physical circumstances, but I do remember that I came out of that water quite unexpectedly with a sense of cleanness that I hadn't experienced before and which is still strong in my memory, almost tangible in my memory to this day. Now, not everyone has the same experience, but behind that is the significance that baptism isn't just something that we go through as a way of becoming a member of the church. It is a truly spiritual event in which something takes place that is much more than just a cerebral recognition of the significance and the meaning of what we go through. Something takes place which is spiritual, not just physical. And likewise, taking the bread and wine should be for us a truly spiritual event, not just some rite or cipher that we go through to signify that we're a genuine Christian. That's easy to lose sight of when it's repeated many times in our lives. It's, you know, of course, many times over 50 for me. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul confronted that same situation in the church there. In 1 Corinthians 11, verse 20, he says to them, "So then, when you come together, it's not the Lord's supper you eat. For when you are eating, some of you go ahead with your own private suppers. As a result, one person remains hungry and another gets drunk." In other words, the occasion had, because it was combined with a meal, had become a kind of dinner party for them, where the central reason for being there was to enjoy the food, enjoy the wine, enjoy the social atmosphere, spend time with friends, which itself meant excluding other people who weren't as close or as friendly with them as others. So verse 26, Paul went on to say, "For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." "Whenever" is perhaps better translated, "however often or however many times you eat this bread and drink this wine." And he's referring to what we were talking about before, the natural tendency that after repeating something, it begins to lose its significance and we can easily become simply occupied in the physical event. Verse 27, continuing on, he says, "So when then whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and blood of the Lord." And in the following verses, he goes on to point out that this is indeed a spiritual event with a spiritual implications. Now, of course, he's focusing here upon the negative, which applies if we find ourselves caught in the similar situation of not recognizing or discerning that this is a truly spiritual occasion. If it's a spiritual event, much more than just a remembering, although we must remember, much more than a memorial, it's a truly spiritual experience, which really is real in its connection with Christ through all of us as we take it together. So if we go back to John 6 again, a few verses on from where Joe was reading, and pick it up in verse 48, Jesus said again, and this is actually the third time in this discussion with them that he says this, "I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which people may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world."